London calling. David here. I've got Adam on the other end of the line. This is the latest in our Meet Your Guide series. So, Adam, the way these usually work is, you know, you start at the beginning. I want to hear about, well, where you grew up, where you're grounded. Edinburgh, in other words. Go on.
Yes. Let's start at the very beginning. It's a very good place to start. To borrow from Rodgers and Hammerstein. Yes, I was born in Edinburgh in 1969 and was brought up just south of Edinburgh in a mining village called Lonehead, pronounced Lonehead, in that neck of the woods in Midlothian. My mum kept house, my dad was a diesel mechanic, and we lived in the same house as my granny and my grandfather, and we all called my grandfather Pops. So I think that's the very beginning.
That's fantastic, Adam. A mining village. How many people in the mining village?
Ooh, a couple of thousand. Yeah, it's... These days, there's a huge retail park there in the Edinburgh commuter belt. And the location of the colliery is occupied, believe it or not, by a haggis factory, or an haggis factory, perhaps, would be better. If you wrote that detail into a script, no one would believe you. You know, the industry's gone, and where it once stood, there's a haggis factory.
Fantastic. So, I mean, do you remember actually seeing miners go to work in the morning then?
Yes. My grandfather was a miner. My grandfather fell in love with my grandmother in a place called... My grandfather was from a place called Ratho, to the west of Edinburgh. And he had to leave his position as a farmer's boy to get married to my granny. He was 18, she was 16. And he went to live in her hometown, Lonehead. And he went down the pit. He became a miner. And I think my dad, my grandfather always thought my dad was a great success because he didn't go down the pit. Huh. He was a diesel mechanic and he repaired lorries, trucks that delivered coal.
Good heavens. So do you remember them? I'm fascinated by this. Do you remember them coming home at night with dirty faces?
Miners. My dad certainly, yeah. I remember my dad getting washed at the sink. We had a... two stone sinks in our house, one ostensibly for dishes and the other a deeper sink for washing clothes. Uh-huh. I'm making it, God, this sounds Dickensian as I'm saying it.
It's great, though.
The early 70s.
Yeah, it's great though.
And between the two sinks, there were two iron lugs which were there to accommodate a mangle, a wringer for wringing out the clothes.
Yeah. Well, this is a little bit like a card game. I mean, the card I would play at this point is that my uncle's farm did not have a flush toilet indoors. It was an outhouse. So I know a bit about that sort of thing.
Yeah, quite so. And in both cases, I think, David, really not so very long ago.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So how about school then? What did you take to? I mean, I know you're a big football fan, or at least you were. Did that start right from the get? Did you get that from your dad, or did you? Where did all that come about? And what's the team?
Yeah, I think I got music from my dad. He wasn't much of a football fan, strangely enough. Huh. Yeah, I loved football, but in terms of playing football, unfortunately, I had the turning circle of an oil tanker, and all the grace of a house, and so I was never a very good footballer, but I enjoyed watching and playing, and I enjoyed the stories behind it.
Being a Yank, I know nothing about this. I mean, what I know about is baseball and stuff like that. And when you're a kid and you're playing baseball, and if somebody's not very good, the last kid that gets chosen, you put him in right field and he bats ninth. So what about football? What about English football? British, world football. Where does the kid who's not very gifted end up? What's his position?
Yeah, I think that's the same idea as last pick. Yeah, eventually I became a passable goalkeeper.
Because of
And
your size, right? Because
well, no, that's he's the last guy to get picked. The last guy get picked, goes in goal. What do you call a guy who hangs around with a group of footballers? A goalkeeper.
I see. So is the, now this is educating me. So is the first kid that gets picked, is he the striker then?
Yeah, the first guy that gets picked is Ian Stenhouse, Beano. I still remember his name. And this is, best part of 50 years ago. Yeah, the star player usually does the picking, in actual fact. And then you go down through the misshapen and the lame. And to me.
I'm gonna have to tear myself away from this because this fascinates me. I've got one more question about this, and this just takes me right back to when I was a kid. And of course, American. Well, I think now they are playing football. Not well, they're playing American football, but British football as well. But when we were kids, we just swarmed. Everybody swarmed on the ball. There might be 20 kids playing, and all 20 of them would be around the ball. Is that the way British kids play when they're little?
I think so, yeah. That swarm is a good way of d describing it. Maybe the Scots word would be a stramash,
A smash.
which is a loose, unruly aggregation of violent bodies.
Sort of blob of them, in other
Yeah,
words.
a stramash.
It's fantastic. Okay, so what about subjects at school? What did you like? What were you good at? That sort of stuff.
Oh, okay. I liked English. I liked everything about writing and storytelling. Yeah, I liked art. I think the first, well, actually, the first thing I ever wanted to be was I wanted to work on an oil rig because when I was about five, they piped the North Sea oil in to great fanfare, and it seemed like an amazing thing to do when I was five. And those of you who know me will know what a sissy I am in adult life, and I think I would have lasted about 2 minutes on an oil rig. But yeah, I think art was one of the things that I loved. I loved drawing.
Adam, did I ever tell you that I did work on an oil rig?
I was going to say, David, you did. Yes, you were actually out there.
Yes. Yeah, that's another story, though. All
That's a
right.
whole
So,
podcast in itself.
yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's get you to, well, teenage and 16 and school. I mean, did you go on to some sort of college, or did you go right to work? What happened? What's the story?
Well, I did a drama at Queen Margaret College in Edinburgh. And I did a year at Telford College in Edinburgh, also doing drama. I never became an actor. Never became an actor. I was a stage manager for 2 years, and then I moved to London to try and become a journalist. But yeah, I did drama in Edinburgh.
So how did you want to be an actor, and then did you sort of think, no, I don't really have it in me to be an, how did all that, how did you get diverted, or how did you become a stage manager?
Yeah, I think I got diverted or nudged in that path through English again, through plays, through reading John Osborne and Harold Pinter. I had a bit of difficulty with Pinter. I went to the local library in Loanhead and said to the librarian, very stern woman, "Do you have any Harold Pinter?" And she said, "Well, it's not for the likes of you, Harold Pinter." So I went to my English teacher to get a note for the librarian to say I was allowed to read Harold Pinter. And she slammed this catalogue on the. She was clearly unhappy at the subversive nature of the writing. And she said, "Well, choose one." And so I went through the list. I didn't know my Pinter from my elbow. And I saw one was listed called the collection. And I thought, oh, good, that'll have them all in it. So I ordered that one. And I learned about a week later that the collection is the name of one single play. And so, yeah, that was my introduction to play script and drama.
That's
so
fantastic.
I think that's how I got into drama school.
That's fantastic. And then famously you came down to London to see what all the fuss was about. I'm quoting you here. So how old were you then?
23.
And did you, well, you bought a return ticket, didn't you? So you didn't, you weren't sure you were going to stay.
That's right, I bought a return ticket on the National Express, the bus. The bus from Edinburgh to London is attritional. You can be in Dubai from London in less time than it takes to get the bus. It's horrific.
And
I thought, I'll stay for 6 months, see what all the fuss is about, then go somewhere else.
That's 1992. So we've got you down in London. Because I went through all this, I'm very interested in this process of becoming a Londoner. So did you know, first of all, did you know anybody in London? I knew one person in London when I came here in 73.
Yeah, who did you know, David?
He was a guy from the University of Wisconsin, a guy named Daniel. He was over here studying British Middle Eastern history. He was a graduate student.
Okay.
How about you? Right. Did you know anyone in London?
Yes. Having worked in the theatre in Scotland for 2 years as a stage manager, I've made a lot of friends in that community who lived in London, including my future wife.
Oh, fantastic! Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so great.
Karen and I met in Perth in Scotland. And so I moved to London.
She was acting, was she? What was she doing?
She was an actor.
Oh, fantastic. And you were the stage manager?
I was, yes. I was the DSM, Deputy Stage Manager.
And one day you plucked up your nerve and asked her for a date or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. It only took 7 years.
That's wonderful. So you came down on that bus, and you didn't stay in a hotel. You must have stayed with a friend. You must have slept on a sofa somewhere, somebody's sofa.
Yeah.
And what neighborhood was that, Adam?
Well, the tube station was Woodside Park. The neighborhood was North Finchley, at the very top of the Northern Line.
Uh-huh.
And as grateful as I was for the accommodation, I was slightly disappointed because it was a red brick street of terraced houses. It looked more like Coronation Street than London.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, hang on. And this isn't London. So very far north London.
Yeah, fantastic. You know, I came from the Hook of Holland into Harwich, is it? I can't remember now. It was cheap. It was the overnight thing. I was a student saving money. And I took that train into Liverpool Street, and it was mile after mile after mile east end. I got depressed, partly because I was tired. And I'd come from a very beautiful campus, University of Wisconsin. And it was Sunday morning. Daniel was asleep. He didn't answer his phone. I thought, okay, well, I'll walk. And it turns out he was living off Belgrave Square. And I didn't have a map. And I walked out into the middle of the Brick Lane. It was Sunday. And my head was full of Dickens. I thought, my God, it hasn't changed. And then I realized I didn't know where I was going. And then he answered the phone. And he said, look, you can't walk. Take the tube to Victoria. Get in a cab. Give them this address. Well, I got in the cab, and the cab got me to Belgrave Square. And I remember sitting back thinking, I can live here. And then I was with Daniel 2 minutes later. Now that was my first day in London. So what about the job? What was the first job, Adam?
Well, I had a number of temporary situations. I was a stage manager at Goldsmiths College in New Cross for a week. So I commuted from North Finchley to New Cross for a week. That was mad. And then from there, I spent a week in Islington at the famous King's Head.
The King's Head? You worked at the King's Head?
Yeah, I was standing holiday cover, DSM, on the production of Philadelphia, Here I Come, which later transferred to the Wyndhams with Brendan Coyle in as public gar in Brian Friel's play. Brendan Coyle, famous these days as Mr. Bates in Downton Abbey.
Adam, what year was this?
1992.
So, was Dan still alive? Dan Crawford?
Yeah.
So you knew Dan then?
Only in passing. I was there for 1 week. And for those of you who don't know the King's Head, it was a pub theatre. Maybe in New York theatre parlance, you'd probably call it off Broadway. It's a small theatre, pub theatre, room at the back. It was quite rough and ready back then. One of my responsibilities as the DSM was to give everyone their cue at the beginning, and there was no tannoy, so you had to go and do it face to face. But it was quite a large cast in Philadelphia, Here I Come. And so I had to go up a ladder and cross the roof of the theatre, go into the offices and give them their call, and then come back down. On the way back, I had to take the tarpaulin and cover the skylight, which was the only means of ventilation and the only way of achieving a blackout as well for the play. So at the interval, I had to climb back up the ladder across the roof and then take the tarpaulin off to let some air into the place to try and get the smell of cabbage out of the auditorium, because they did it was a supper theatre as well. It was pretty rough and ready. I loved it.
And was he at that time still charging old money?
It was still on the till. Yeah. He had the big old-fashioned cash register that would ring up pounds, shillings and pence.
Yeah.
Which is 22 years after decimalization.
Yeah. So what was the... then how did you get to the Independent? How did all that come about, Adam? Writing, the journalism.
One of my flatmates in North Finchley worked freelance at a PR company, and they were looking for someone to run their cuttings department, collecting coverage on behalf of all the clients from newspapers and television and radio. My job title was I was a media analyst. I took that job and eventually became like a copywriter at that company, writing press releases and later writing sleeve notes for films on video, back when video was a thing, videotape. From there, I moved into freelance journalism.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get to the walking tours in just a minute, but famously, you walk like nobody else walks amongst London Walks guides anyway. You go on these long, long, many, many miles around London, across London, etc., etc. How did all that start?
Yeah, I like a long walk. I think it starts when I was a kid, really. Back when in this country we only had three channels on television, and they switched those channels off from their end several times a day. And you went outside, you wandered around, you explored. I think it comes from there. And in later life, the big walks are kind of a mental health thing, really. When I was coming to the end of my journalism career, because sometime in the early 21st century, everybody became a journalist. And so it was time for journalists to do something else. And I had a bit of a tough time then, trying to decide what to do next. And I went out for a long walk. And on the train on the way back, I found a copy of Time Out magazine, which was a big deal back then because it used to cost, you know, £3. It wasn't a free mag. And they had a feature on the Green Chain walking route, which is part of the Capital Ring. And having just done a big walk and having felt better, having felt its effects on my mental health, I thought, oh, I'll try that. And so it became a thing, doing big walks, plotting routes along underground rivers, walking tube lines. And and it's kind of my hobby now, a big long walk.
I mean, you are, of course, well aware of just how Dickensian this is. I mean, that man would walk all night. He would walk 20 miles, you know, regularly. And I have to say, you're the only person I know. I don't know if you walk all night, but you go on 20-mile walks. And I mean, Dickens knew London better than anybody else, partly because of those walks. And I think it's fair to say that I'll bet you know London better than anyone else because of, I mean, you do, what, one or two a month? Is that right?
I aim to do that. I don't know if I know London better than anyone else, but I was delighted when I found out that Dickens was a big walker. I was quite thrilled with that chime because he's so near to us all the time in London. And when I was a copywriter working in Clerkenwell, not long after I'd first arrived, I was rereading Oliver Twist, and just the coincidence, the chime of the locations in Oliver Twist. You know, I'm sitting on Clerkenwell Green on my lunch break reading Oliver Twist when the penny drops, then I'm sitting right in the heart of the action. So I was delighted to find that Dickens was addicted to walking around London.
Of course, it's certainly the case that, you never exhaust. So you'll be, every time you go out on one of these, you'll see places you haven't ever been to before. Is that right?
Yeah, it's becoming harder to contrive because it's you know, I have to target areas that I don't really know these days. But
have you been through all 32 boroughs?
Yeah, something like the Capital Ring, you can walk it more than once because you can walk it clockwise and you can walk it counterclockwise. This is something that any tour guide will tell you.
Uh-huh.
That when you're putting a tour together, you put the route together and then walk it forwards, walk it backwards, walk it sideways, walk it on the opposite side of the road so that you'll get every angle of the location.
It's so important, isn't it?
It's important, David, yeah.
Yeah,
it's so important. But applying that to any walk, you can walk the Capital Ring both ways. You can walk it in summertime and it's green.
Yeah.
You can walk it in wintertime and it's kind of bleak. It's terrific.
Yeah. For me, the most, in my personal experience, of course it would be up in Hampstead, wouldn't it? But it's that little lane that leads up from the Holly Bush. And if you walk on one side, all you're seeing is a wall. And if you just, it's a short lane. If you get on the other side of it, you can look over the wall. And there's this astonishing piece of kind of sculpture on the side of a house that's delightful, and it turns out it's from Haiti, and it's made from oil drums that were cut down. You don't see that if you walk on the wrong side of the street.
Yeah.
That's what happens. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Karen became a guide, is that right? Before
yes.
You.
Yes, the brains of the operation, Garen became a guide more than 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
She'd been an actor, and she wanted something that was that would use those skills.
Yeah.
And
well, you've almost caught up with her because you've been guiding for, what, 16 or 17 years, is that right?
16 years this year, yeah.
I'll bet you remember your first walk. Does it, everybody remembers their first walk. Do you remember yours?
Yeah.
What was it?
It was Jack the Ripper.
Jack the Ripper, was it?
Yeah. It's on a Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Dark, cold, big group.
Yeah.
And, I'd spoken in public before. I'd performed before as a musician. So that wasn't new. But the thing that took me by surprise is the democratic nature of the staging of a walking tour. Because actors are lucky. I'm sure a lot of actors will disagree with that, but actors are bloody lucky. What happens when we go to watch actors? They switch our light off. And that's our cue to stop talking.
Yeah.
And then they switch their light on.
Yeah.
As if to emphasize. It's their turn now. We don't have that as tour guides. We're in the same light. We're on the same level.
Perfectly put.
And it encourages a dialogue, which I very quickly grew to love, but came as a major shock on that first walking tour.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, you're the storyteller of storytellers. Nobody tells better stories than you, and I think your fund of them is probably greater than anyone else's. Famously, you know, you'll be embarrassed by this, but I've said this for many years, that you're the only person I know who talks like a well-written magazine article. So I want to see if I can get you to just tell one or two stories that you've told in the past. I love that tale about the proposal of marriage on a walking tour. Can I get you to recite that, to tell that, Adam?
Sure, yeah. All sorts of things happen on walking tours. There was a fella, I was waiting at the Whitechapel tube station to lead the Unknown East End. Now, slight diversion, whenever I lead the walk in the Unknown East End, whenever I do an East End virtual tour, I always pause to remember Harry Jackson, a friend and colleague who passed away a couple of years ago. Harry taught me the East End walk, and I always think of him when I'm in the East End. Mm, mm. But he was away, he was on holiday or something. And so I was his stunt double one Sunday afternoon. And this fella came rollicking up to me along the Whitechapel Road outside the tube station and said, mate, you gotta help me, I need a favour. And that's not, too unusual an occurrence in the East End of London. Mate, you gotta help me, I need a favour. What can I do for you? He said, I'm coming on your tour, and I'm bringing my girlfriend, and I'm gonna ask her to marry me. He showed me the ring in the box. Can you pick a point on the tour where I can do it? I thought, wow, brilliant. Romance is alive and well, and living in Whitechapel. Yeah, if I could change anything about that day, what I would do is I would tell the fella where I was going to do the proposal bit for him, because I knew immediately where I was going to do it, and it was right at the end of the walk. Now, in my mind's eye, I can still see him sweating bullets the whole day because he thought I'd forgotten or something. But we got to the park at the end of the tour, Altab Ali Park, and there's a beautiful Bangladeshi monument to the family there. Four big white metal figures representing the father and the children, and a red disc representing the mother, the life-giving warmth of the son of the family. And I thought that would be the place. And so I invited him forward, and he went down on one knee and he proposed to his girlfriend, and she said yes. It was terrific.
And the other walkers?
Yeah, a little round of applause. Who expects that? You know,
that is so just
very
wonderful.
Memorable.
And I think it was you, Adam, who had a 6'7" Dutch schoolboy keel over on Jack the Ripper. Was that right? Was that on your walk, or was that?
Yes. Yeah, that was. We get I love the student groups. They're just so arsey and noisy, and you know, plenty to say. I love student groups, and we had a group of Dutch students, and one of the fellas on the tour, I don't want to exaggerate, he must have been 6'5", you know, 16 years old. He must have been 6'5" if he was an inch. And I'm detailing one particular bit of the tour when he collapsed. And when I say collapsed, he went down like a plumber's bag. It was extraordinary. I mean, straight down. And I thought, oh God, are you okay? And I looked at the teacher, whose eyes are just rolling, as if this happens all the time. She said, that boy has too much imagination for his own good. What a shame.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. How many walks in your repertory now, Adam? A lot.
Ooh. Yeah, a metric lot, yeah. Over the past year, there are now 18 virtual music tours and half a dozen others. But in terms of walking tours, maybe 20.
Mm-hmm. You've been a mainstay and a savior in many respects. You're the guy who came up with the idea of the virtual tours, which has kept us hanging on to the cliff edge with our fingernails, but we're still there. How did all that come about? Let's go back. It'll be just over a year ago now, I think, won't it?
Yeah, March 2020. I'd been out on an East End walking tour, thinking of Harry. And Norwegian students, it's a group that I do every year, terrific kids, great teachers. And one of the teachers was constantly on the telephone, fielding calls from frightened parents in Norway, saying, we want the kids home now. And it felt scary. And then the diary evaporated, all walks were cancelled, and then out of panic, I thought I'd do something online. And the first thing I did was the most cumbersome, unwieldy, ridiculous thing. I called it Spooky Radio Night. It was a chimera of a music tour and a ghost tour delivered on Facebook with records, with live music, and live tweeting. I was tweeting at the same time on a second device and posting blog posts to Facebook, all as part of this event. And it was ridiculous, but it was just out of blind panic. And then gradually, through slowing down and doing a bit of research and observing a number of our colleagues as well as to how they were progressing, we came up with the virtual tours.
You're very generous.
Yeah, it was
with
a
that
scary
we.
Time.
You're very generous with that we. It was you, Adam. And now it's we. I mean, there's I think over 300 of them. It's an astonishing, bit of output, really.
It's an astonishing program. It's everything from Dadaist art in Totteridge and Whetstone in 1934.
Yeah.
To, the history of Dulwich Hamlet Football Club. It's a ridiculous program. I love it.
It's fantastic, and you got the badge. You're a Westminster badge now, and you were so good that they took you on as an instructor. That's right, isn't it? You
yeah.
teach that now.
Yeah, that was an interesting time. I loved the course. I loved doing the Westminster course. I loved doing my badge. It was at the time when my daughter, Isabella, was just setting off to secondary school, high school, and I'd spent a lot of my time being with her when she was young, and she was moving on into a different part of her life, different part of her journey, different part of her adventure. And so I thought, well, what am I going to do? I'm going to need something to do. And I really, thanks to London Walks and David, you and Mary for having me, because I love tour guiding. I wish I'd done it when I was 18. I wish I'd done it straight out of school. Every day spent not tour guiding has been a wasted day. And I thought, what can I do to, you know, keep the tour guiding going now that I've got a little more time, that Isabella's a little less needy, a little more grown up. And so I went to do the Westminster course, loved it. And yeah, very lucky, I was invited to join the tutor team alongside, Fiona, our fantastic colleague, Fiona Lucas. And so yeah, I teach tour guiding these days, yeah.
You better be careful you don't find me as one of your students one of these times.
Excellent. Go to the back of the class, Tucker. Yeah, you chewing.
Exactly. brilliant. Okay, so it's April. What is today? April 3rd.
April 3rd.
We're backing on the street. I'm doing one this afternoon, and you might be doing one tonight if we get to. But yeah. Famously, we go even if we've just got one person.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing too. I'm very proud of that. We keep our end of the bargain. Or they've kept their end of the bargain. We're going to keep ours. So.
Yeah, I think if we don't go, something's broken.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
So you're shouting in the street this afternoon, are you?
I'll be in Kensington.
Excellent. Break a leg.
Yeah. And you might be in the city if we get some customers. Get yes. a customer, is that right?
Ghosts of the old city.
Yeah.
I've got to tell you, I no longer care. I used to be a bit embarrassed about this. I bloody love doing the ghost tours. Ridiculous. And people tend to come along in the spirit of ridiculousness. So it's a lovely two-way street. Shouting my head off and bulging my eyes like Fraser out of Dad's Army. I love it.
And what about, when's the next, well, how about a music one then? Both a virtual tour and out on this. Oh yeah, let's talk a little bit about, because we've had this discussion this past week about doing a different music, a kind of series of Shoe Leather on Pavement music tours. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, very excited about that. Wednesday night, we're just putting the finishing touches to that. Wednesday night, four different tours, a different tour every Wednesday night for 4 weeks. So it's Rock and Roll Soho, Rock and Roll Covent Garden, then Rock and Roll Marylebone and Fitzrovia, and then finally Rock and Roll Mayfair, Piccadilly and more Soho. So it's four different tours, and by the time you've done them all, you'll know everything there is to know about pop and rock music in the West End. So that's the idea, a series.
And how many different starting points will that be, Adam?
Yeah, I think it's going to be three.
Uh-huh.
Two of them start at Tottenham Court Road. And yeah, we've got three different starting points, in fact. Because we were trying to get one, but it wasn't. There'd be a lot of walking before anything interesting happened.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, we've got three different meeting places, but it's all within the West End. So we're going to conquer an entire city in terms of one subject.
And
so I greatly look forward to it.
Are you going to take the guitar on all of them then?
Yes, I think so. Wednesday night, we're going to have to wait and see what happens with pub stops, because we like to stop at the pub, but we'll see what the rules are going to be. I mean, before too long, we'll be fine. But the idea is, yes, stop at the pub, do some live music along the way, either at the pub or in the street, depending on the weather.
Have you ever had a police officer look at you slightly askew, as if, are you busking and all of that?
Yeah, I'm going to say sadly no. It'd be great publicity, wouldn't it? Being dragged away in a Black Mariah.
Wonderful. Okay, well, look, you wanted this to be 25 minutes. We've gone on for over 40 minutes, but we're gonna do some more of these as we go through the years. Let's make that plural, if that's all right with you. I'd like to ask you to come back and do part two.
Yeah, always a pleasure, never a chore. Fantastic.
Thanks a lot, Adam.
Thanks, David.
Okay, cheers. Ciao.